everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk at episode 617 for April 17th, 2017. This is the Stuttered Prayers edition with return guest and Stutter Talk host, Christopher Constantino. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Peter. It's good to be talking to you again.
I can already see the Stutter Talk ratings going up just having said your name aloud. you are somebody who is very well liked from the listeners, and I mean, I love that about Stutter Talk, that the listeners love hearing from Gerald McGuire about the medical research, and from Dennis Drena about genetics, and from Christopher Constantino about embracing stuttering and living with stuttering. And so I think it's really cool how popular your shows are. So thanks for being a part of Stutter Talk.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm flattered to be well received.
Awesome. So I don't know if I've said it, but I am Peter Reitzis. I'm a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist in North Carolina. And Christopher Constantino is a person who stutters, and he's a PhD student in communication sciences and disorders at the University of Memphis. Chris is an ASHA certified Tennessee licensed speech language pathologist, and he's joining us via Skype from Memphis. So Chris, we're going to be talking about your participation in religion with a stutter. And just to get us started, you are a member of the Secular Franciscan Order, which is a Catholic community. And first of all, let me know if I'm pronouncing this right, but can you tell us about the Secular Franciscan Order? Am I saying it right?
Yeah, you're saying it correctly.
And now I'm going to say up front, I don't know much about this community at all, so I'd love just a little background.
Yeah. So within the Catholic Church, there's many different societies and orders and groups in which people get together in order to express particular spiritualities or ways of life. And what makes a religious, or what makes an order is that the members follow a rule of life. And so usually that rule will talk about how the members are to be in relation with others, with themselves, what their prayer life will be like, how they will serve the poor, and the kind of social justice issues they might be interested in. And what makes a secular order different from a religious order is that members of a religious order typically live in monastic communities, and they take vows. Those vows are celibacy, poverty, and obedience, typically. So those are what you would picture as like a monk or a nun. Members of a secular order are just normal folk who live in society. They may live alone or with their families, and they don't take any vows because, as you could imagine, taking a vow of poverty might make it difficult to raise children, and you wouldn't want to impede your children's health.
And I'm going to joke with you, it's not good for a marriage either.
No. Especially because my fiance is not particularly religious, so I don't think she would want to go along with any of my crazy plans.
Sure.
You still live by a rule. And so as a secular Franciscan, that rule comes from St. Francis of Assisi. However, I don't want to give the idea that I'm a monk or anything. I'm just a normal person trying to find meaning in my life, I guess.
And I find it so so interesting because as a Jew, the term social justice is a term that pops up in my synagogue all the time. It's a big part of Judaism. So I find it really interesting that it was one of the first things you said about your Catholic community. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's also one of the biggest focuses of especially secular orders, because the whole idea is that you're actively participating in the society that you live in. You're working, you're raising a family, you're fighting for change. I would say it's important to always, I think one of the things that's often talked about is how can we be in solidarity with other people, especially poor people and oppressed people, refugees, outcasts, people who are discriminated against for various reasons. I would say that's one of the most important aspects of it.
Yeah, and I'm also just going to observe that when I hear a term like social justice, I think of activism. And I think of when I was a kid, you know, one of those jobs I couldn't have in my mind was being a banker because you can't stutter and be a banker. And I also I imagine, how could I be an activist? I can't stand there and picket and stutter, I'm just laughing about, you know, how as a kid, even like being an activist, it was something that I felt a little bit excluded from because of my stutter. And it was my own exclusion, you know. But anyway, but this isn't about me. This is about you. So every month your congregation meets, which includes a great deal of prayer and discussion. And at a recent meeting, you shared with me that it was your turn to lead the recitation of the Franciscan Crown Rosary, which you describe as a very long, repeated recitation of well-known prayers meant to foster meditation and contemplation. Now, I'd love to know what happened.
Okay, yeah. So I had emailed you because of your recent conversation with Naomi, reminded me of an experience that I recently had with my fraternity brothers and sisters. And to set the stage, we're sort of, I'm a fairly new member of the group, and so it's usually the newer members who will lead the prayers. And so it's my turn to take a turn leading, and the prayers are basic and simple prayers that are meant to not really concentrate on the words, but to allow a rhythm so that everybody else can meditate. And as I'm praying, I'm having frequent stutters, frequent blocks. And everybody there knows that I stutter. They've been very supportive and very loving, and it has never been an issue. However, every time I get stuck and I'm blocking, the woman sitting next to me whispers to me the words. As every stutterer has experienced, when somebody tells you the word that you're stuck on, you can automatically say it after that.
Yeah.
Right. All the pressure of saying the word is taken away and it comes out. And so she does it and it works. I get past the block, and I imagine she thinks she did something good, because like clockwork, every time I block, she says the word and I move forward. And because of the nature of the activity, I can't really stop what I'm doing and explain to her, hey, listen, I know you're trying to help, but it actually makes it worse when you do that, because now there's more pressure on me not to stutter, because I don't want you to have to whisper, and you're actually making me more nervous, not less nervous, and Could you please just let me stutter? So as I'm repeating these prayers, I'm getting, you know, more and more frustrated. And I decide that instead of allowing her and what's happening to frustrate me, because after all, she was really only trying to help me. And I hadn't explained this to her, so she didn't really know what was going on. I started thinking about why it was bothering me so much. And the conclusion that I came to was that every time she whispered, it was wounding my pride. It was like a signal that I couldn't do something and that I needed help. So instead of trying to, my initial reaction is, okay, you can't stutter because then she's going to whisper. But instead of indulging that sort of need to overcome, I instead tried to seek her whispers as a way of, lessening my ego, humbling myself. And so as I would block, I could sort of predict when she would whisper to me. And eventually her whispering sort of became humorous. And every time she whispered, it was I would smile. And I would even start voluntary stuttering just to see if I could get her to whisper. And
I love that so much. It's almost like, I mean, you're reclaiming that space a little bit. And I love it.
Even with the fake stutters, she would, right on cue whisper the words to me. Afterwards, I spoke with everybody and just kind of explained to them that I really appreciate it when they're patient and they just let me stutter without trying to fill in my words, and it has never happened again. But it still makes me smile when I think about it.
So, if you don't mind me asking, how old was this lady?
I think she's probably in her 80s.
Okay, then she gets a pass. Because I was going to say, if she's like 40, then she doesn't get a pass. But if she's in her 80s, then she gets her pass, because I'm envisioning my grandfather doing this too. And mm-hmm. It's something that he would absolutely do. As you're telling me the story, I have to imagine that other people heard her whispering. What was that like to know that everybody could hear her, quote, helping you?
Well, initially it was really embarrassing, right? Like it was that same reaction, like, man, you are humiliating me. And I know you're not meaning to, but that doesn't change what's happening. And I think as my orientation to it sort of flipped, the fact that other people could hear it made it all the more humbling, right? If it was only me, it probably wouldn't have been so bad, or so difficult. But because I'm assuming other people could hear her, if I could hear her, the room wasn't very large. I think it sort of made the exercise even more effective, because it really forced me to be okay with being helped, with not having to overcome it all on my own. Frankly, the thing that bothered me the most was what I said at the beginning, was the fact that the whispering helped. Right, the fact that when she said the word, all of a sudden it popped out.
I was just gonna ask you about that, because she inadvertently I don't want to say she helped you, but she found a way to, like, it was working, you know, like,
yeah,
like
that it was should, the most frustrating
yeah,
part.
Yeah, it was working. I mean, it's such an amazing thing about stuttering. Like, I try to explain this to my colleagues where, like, I've seen children who stutter avoid in front of speech therapists and they don't know it. So I'll say, okay, let's go to that place today for lunch. You know, the one with the cheeseburgers. Oh, do you mean Burger King? No, the cheeseburgers and, you know, that clown and they have that M on the sign. Oh, you mean McDonald's? Yeah, McDonald's. And I'll say to them, that's what your student just did to you. You know, they made you say it first. So, but she figured it out and wow. So she got rewarded for doing something you didn't like. That's This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzis here with Christopher Constantino. So I love how you handled that, where you handled it in a way where you didn't embarrass her back. And it was very thoughtful and it showed well for stutterers. I'm reminded of the time. This isn't my story to tell, but I'll tell it, where a 13-year-old boy was getting bar mitzvahed and he had a real good stutter. And his speech therapist went up on the bima with him and kept trying to help him in ways like use your tools and reading in chorus with the child. And the child finally just kicked the speech therapist, like, leave me alone. Now, I don't think you should have kicked this lady, but when
you're... Yeah, that's why I just laughed so hard, is I was picturing, kicking her, and it didn't. I don't think that would have worked out too well.
But for this 13-year-old boy who had a really hard time getting his words out, like, this was his day. This is the day where in his religion he became a man, and he just kicked the speech therapist, like, leave me alone. And there was love in that kick, too. So,
it's almost... symbolic, right? It's him sort of exerting his independence.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So would you mind if I ask you some more questions about your stuttering and your participation in religion?
Yeah.
So I know about confession in the Catholic community is from what I've seen in TV shows and the movie. I really don't know much about it, but I know that it requires you talking to a priest. What's that like when you're in confession? Well, actually, just tell us a tiny bit about what confession is and what's it like to do that with a stutter?
Yeah. So the idea behind confession is that no matter what you do wrong, God forgives you. Right. And so the sort of the mechanism for obtaining that forgiveness is to go to confession, and you basically explain to the priest what you would like forgiveness for. And the priest usually offers some kind words of encouragement, and then says some prayers, and then you say some prayers, and that's about the extent of the ritual. And it occurs in different ways. Sometimes it's face to face, where you and the priest see each other. Sometimes it's anonymous, where there will be a screen between you and the priest. Maybe not unintuitively, is that a word? Maybe not intuitively. I find the screen to be more difficult for my stuttering than the face-to-face, because typically it's a very... I know it sounds kind of awkward and scary, but it's really a really supportive environment. And it's often very encouraging. And I'll typically, if it's face to face, just tell the priest that I have a stutter, or the priest already knows me, and so I don't have to tell them. If the screen's up, I don't really know who the priest is. And so they might recognize my stutter, or they might not know who I am either. So sometimes I feel like advertising is like advertising to the same person over and over and over again, right? Because it could be somebody who already knows I stutter. And I mean, then it's just a matter of, yeah, it's okay. Like I already know, and you feel kind of silly for a split second, but it's not a big deal. I just would rather have them be able to tell them face to face.
Yeah, that is such a great point, because I will admit I have over advertised before, where when you're in grad school and you start to advertise your stuttering before giving a presentation, and your best friends in grad school are saying with a smile, "Peter, we've heard this speech 27 times. You can just talk," you know?
That's what it feels like. Cause my parish is pretty small, so I often have the same priest, but I've had some experiences where at the end, when I'm asked to recite a prayer, sort of the same experience I had during the rosary is, if I'm stuttering, the priest might think I forgot the words and try to help. And so I often will tell them that I stutter, and just to, you know, be patient. And so I often tell the same priest over and over and over again that I have a stutter.
Wait, that's really great to know. As a child, did you fear going to confession? Did you worry about stuttering in confession or during confession?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, as a child, I feared stuttering in every situation. I think the intimacy of it makes it a little bit scarier, but I don't remember it being any scarier than talking to a teacher after class or giving a presentation. I think as a child, you also don't have a firm understanding of like why the ritual is supposed to be comforting rather than terrifying.
Right.
So yeah. As a child, you're like telling the priest how you beat up your brother, and I think you're more concerned about that than you are about stuttering. I think it was scary, but I think as a child, it's lots of things when you're stuttering are scary.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that there might be some worry that the priest might think you're not telling the truth during confession because now you're stuttering, or does that not cross your mind?
I don't think that ever comes up. I mean, I think from the priest's perspective, it's sort of a very humbling experience where somebody's intimately sharing with you things that they are uncomfortable with, probably, right? So I think the priest is often grateful to have gotten to participate in such a intimate way with another person. It's not like they could ever really know if you're lying. So I've never really had that thought cross my mind.
Mm. So I want to ask you about some other things that might be related to your Catholic experience. I know that saying grace is very prominent in some communities. Do you say grace, or have you said grace? And what's that like with a stutter?
Yeah, my family growing up, we said grace before every meal. I think similar to your story with the Seder questions.
Yeah.
This is just something my family did, but they always pick the youngest brother to say grace. So I very rarely said grace because I'm the oldest sibling. And so it was never that big of a deal for me. And I don't know that it would have been anyway, given that It's just in front of my family, and they all already knew that I stuttered. I do remember in religious education having to recite prayers out loud and give presentations. But the feeling of that is very similar to the feeling of giving a presentation in school or having to memorize anything, like a poem in English class or something like that. You're always worried that the person grading you is going to think that you forgot rather than it's a stutter, which in retrospect is kind of silly. If it's very clear that you have a stutter, it isn't like they're going to forget during the course of the presentation.
Yeah, you're right, but some folks just make some very bad decisions in life, and I just see bad decisions all the time. So unfortunately, it happens. I can imagine just worrying about it every meal. Like, is today the day they're going to ask me to say grace? I mean, like, that's how much I worried about stuttering. So it was always your younger brother, huh?
Almost always, yeah.
Well, do you think, and I'm really, I hope I'm not planting the wrong seed here, but do you think there's any way that they did that just to make life easier on you, or you think it's totally different?
You know, Peter, I had never considered that. That's entirely possible.
I mean, out of love, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I just never thought that. That wouldn't be out of the question. Yeah, that's possible. Actually, and I don't know if this is a coincidence, but my youngest brother is the only brother out of the four of us who does not stutter.
Wow. Conspiracies arising here.
So actually, they did always ask the non-stuttering child to say grace.
No, come on. I can't be the first person who has pointed this out to you.
No, you are. You're like a detective.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope it doesn't get me in trouble with your folks. But, so you am I remembering correctly? Did you tell me that you've never said amen fluently, or to say it differently, you stutter every time you say amen? Is that right?
I was telling you about the... During the Mass on Sunday, at the end of the Mass is when the communion ritual occurs, and basically the whole congregation gets in a line, and ministers give out the bread and the wine. And the way that the ritual works is the person holds up either the bread or the cup of wine and says something, and then you respond with amen, and then they give it to you, and then you proceed. And there's sort of like a rhythm to it as the whole church moves through the ritual. And I'm not sure I've ever said amen fluently during the interaction of the communion ritual. And, you know, it's one of these situations where you don't have time to really explain to everybody around you that you have a stutter. It's sort of just a fast-paced, they say the little thing, you say your thing, they give you the bread or the wine, and you carry on. And so typically what happens is I throw the ritual off. The person gives me the bread without me having said amen because I'm sitting there blocking. Then they look at me like, what are you doing? And then eventually it comes out and the whole world falls back into place and I move forward. But it occurs every Sunday.
Wow. So you are advertising whether you want to or not.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. That is something else. What do you think that is? Like, do you think, I mean, so I don't want to assume that you're 100% okay with stuttering during that moment. So let me just ask you, are you okay 100% with stuttering at that moment, or would you prefer that you could have the option not to stutter at that moment?
I think in the moment that it's happening, my concern is really for the man or the woman who is the minister, and I really just want to, you know, tell them everything's okay, right? Because typically they've already given, because of how automatic it is, they've already proceeded with the ritual, but I haven't done my appropriate response yet, right? So I'm sitting there holding the thing that they weren't supposed to give me until I said, amen. And so they're a little confused, and I just want to like tell them that everything's okay, yeah. That it'll come out. I think I always, in that moment, would like to say it fluently, just to save them the discomfort of wondering what's happening.
So I want to just dig into this stuttering a bit, because I find it fascinating. So there was a time in my life where I was learning various speaking strategies, including stuttering more, but also stuttering with a forward-moving manner. And I remember there was a time where I still felt I couldn't say Wilmington, Delaware, where I was from, where I was born. And I really didn't feel like I could say it with much control. I could try, but it was still going to come out very stuttered. Do you think in that moment of saying amen, you could wrap some level of forward-moving speech around it? Or do you think it's one of those moments in life where there's just so much time pressure and experience that it's going to be hard?
There's a lot of stuff going on in that moment. I think for me, my speech isn't the most important thing in that moment. I'm typically meditating or praying and just not really thinking about my speech up until the moment that I have to speak. And so it's not something that like I prepare for as I'm walking down the aisle. I think, yeah, I could probably, I've had enough experience with playing with my stuttering that I could probably purposely use that experience as a time to manipulate and play with my speech. And actually, it's probably a really good time to do that. I think one of the things that might make it so difficult is it's so primal. I've been doing that action since I was a little kid. And ever since I was a little kid, I've had the same trouble with it. And so it's almost like how when you talk to people who you haven't seen for a long time, when you still stutter very differently than you do now, you sort of fall back into those old habits. And it's sort of this ritual that stretches back to my early childhood and when I was stuttering very severely. And so I think there's this sort of behavioral memory thing that happens where I forget all the things that might help me smooth my speech out in that moment.
And please know, I'm not suggesting that you should be doing those things to smooth out your speech in that moment. I'm just trying to better understand that moment. And, you know, it reminds me of, I recently saw, I never get to do anything, but my wife, we recently went and saw Marc Maron perform. He's a stand-up comedian. And he was talking about, I don't remember exactly, but he was talking about being in recovery from alcohol and drugs, and how he doesn't want to go back to certain places because seeing certain places might trigger certain behaviors that he used to have. And I'm thinking about this experience of yours, because if I can envision myself in my old synagogue when I was a child, I could just imagine all those feelings flooding back. I mean, just talking about the four questions in Passover last week, a lot of that stuff started flooding back. It just did now. Like I can, you can almost get transported a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that stuff happens, especially at family gatherings. A lot of the people you talk to, you might have some distant relatives that you don't see often. And the last time you spoke to them, you had a really difficult time with your stuttering. And the last time before that, you had a really difficult time with their stuttering. And it sort of builds up this pattern that when I talk to this person, this is how I always talk. When I go through this ritual, this is how it always comes out. And that's not amenable to change. I just think it makes the change process, it's just more resistant. It just makes it harder.
Great points. This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzis with Christopher Constantino. Chris is a person who stutters, who's getting his doctoral degree in communication sciences and disorders at the University of Memphis. Chris is an ASHA certified speech language pathologist. Let me ask you one last question, Chris. And we're not trying to convert anybody to Judaism or Catholicism. I want the listeners to know that. I also want to mention that Ramadan's coming up. And for our Muslim listeners, if you've had specific experiences with stuttering and Islam or stuttering in Ramadan or other holidays or rituals, please let us know. Send an email to stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com. We've never had anyone come on, Chris, and talk about stuttering and Islam, and I think that would be awesome. So send us your experiences, listeners. So Chris, last question for you. How has your faith impacted how you view stuttering or just your experience with stuttering?
I think it's impacted it a lot. I wasn't always a active Catholic. I was raised Catholic, and then I think, as most people do, went through a fairly rebellious teenage and 20s phase where I didn't want to have anything to do with religion. And so growing up, I think I always saw my stuttering as something to be overcome. As something that I had sort of given up hope that my speech was ever going to change, but I felt that through just keeping a stiff upper lip and not letting it get me down and through a positive attitude that I could just get through it, just sort of grin and bear it. And so I would say that was my first phase of how I was going to handle it. I was just going to pretend like it wasn't even there, even though it was very much there. And I stuck with that coping strategy up until graduate school. And I think what changed was, one, it stopped working. As I was doing my clinical rounds for my speech pathology degree, I had to interact with patients and clients, and I had to do a lot more talking than I ever had to do as in my undergrad was in engineering. And talking to people who weren't other professional engineers who already kind of knew what I'd be talking about. I was talking to stroke patients and people with dementia and people who could easily be confused, and children. And I was having a very difficult time communicating. And frankly, could really struggle to do my to cover my responsibilities at the hospitals and at the clinics. And so it became clear that I needed more than just a stiff upper lip. And so at that time, though, I had started learning more about stuttering, and you know, I knew there were some things I could do to stutter easier and reduce all of my all the things I was doing to avoid stuttering that actually made stuttering more difficult. And so I again started to work on my speech. But this time the goal wasn't just my attitude. It was to try to figure out what I was doing when I was talking so that I could maybe talk easier and stutter more openly. But still, I think that that attitude of overcoming was still in the back of my mind. Like, this is just something, this is something difficult that I have to get past. And I think when I started to become more active in my faith again, I stopped seeing my stuttering as something that I needed to overcome. And I started seeing it as something good, something that was part of me, and that could lead me to others and lead me to experiences that I would not have had without it. I sort of, instead of trying to overcome it, decided to follow its lead, sort of trust it more. I know this is starting to sound sort of mystical, but I mean, I think religion by its nature is a little bit mystical.
No, but see, I hear you, but I don't think it sounds mystical at all. And I am no religious scholar, but if you'll permit me, it sounds a little bit like you're forgiving yourself for stuttering and now you're going to deal with it productively. I mean, that's what it sounds like. And that's, that forgiveness concept is big in religion, right? Or, I mean, I assume it is, but
it wasn't. It almost went beyond that, because it was almost like, in order to seek forgiveness for something, it had to be wrong, right? Well, I didn't even need forgiveness for this.
Well, no. Well, but what I mean is, perhaps forgiving yourself for feeling it was wrong, or or forgiving yourself for having a view of stuttering that you want to change, like that. And I don't want to overthink this. But no, I think what you're sounding really doesn't sound mystical at all. It sounds very grounded. Like, I needed to make some changes and I found a way to do it. I recently was talking to someone who was telling me how helpful an online Facebook forum has been for parents of children with autism. And the person's like, can you believe that there's this group out there where we can talk about these issues and be open and people don't judge us? And I'm like, yeah, I can. I found that in the stuttering world 25 years ago. But you know what? I know you didn't just say that stuttering is a gift, but when you say that it brings you in contact with people you wouldn't otherwise know, that's,
well, I think it is a gift, right? So when I'm stuttering and I'm stuck, right, I think if I split my journey, and it's a continuous journey, I'm not saying there's only going to be these three phases, but if I'm stuck and I'm stuttering to a person, I think in that first page phase where I was just trying to, you know, get through it, what I would be thinking in my head is, just, you know, stick with it. Don't think about what they're thinking about. Just, you know, you can do this, sort of like a pep talk to myself. I think in my second phase, I may have been thinking about, like, okay, where is my tension? How can I get past this stutter so that it ends? I think now when I'm stuttering, I think to myself, if I try not to stutter here. I'm not trusting that other person. I'm not trusting that, like, this is an opportunity for them to show compassion to me. This is an opportunity for them to develop a more intimate relationship with me. This is an opportunity for them to get to know me better and to react kindly to me. And so for me to automatically assume that what's happening between us is something wrong and something bad that I have to stop as soon as possible, I think is judging the person I'm talking to unfairly. It's not giving them an opportunity to react to me in a kind and loving way. And if they don't react to me in a kind and loving way, that's okay too. I mean, it's not ideal. I don't want that, but sort of the consequences of being vulnerable are that sometimes you're gonna get hurt.
Do you think that your specific stuttering experience has also allowed you to be more patient and thoughtful with others?
Yeah, absolutely. It I think not only does it help with empathy, as a lot of people talk about, right? You know what it's like to be stigmatized, to be discriminated against, to be made fun of, to feel like you can't do something. But it also forces you to be patient with yourself. It forces you to be okay with being humiliated and being not able to do something the way you wanted to. It forces you to give up control. And when you become more comfortable giving up control, I think you become much more able to respond freely to what's going on around you. When things don't have to run a certain way, you're better able to react in the way that you want to react.
So I'm sorry, I said I had that last question, but you just keep bringing up these amazing nuggets. So let me just pursue this giving up control thing, because I agree with you. That's so very powerful. But for me, I'm all for giving up control, but it didn't feel very good when it was at a time in my life when I didn't have control. So here's an example. Today, I'm not perfect with stuttering hard on Wilmington, Delaware, but if somebody asks me where I'm from and I say, well, Wilmington, Delaware, that's not such a big deal anymore. But part of the reason is that I know I can exert some level of control. I'm not saying perfect fluency, but I don't have to stutter like when I was 6 years old or when I was 20 years old and I felt I had no ability to move forward. So, I mean, don't you think that this idea of not giving up control or giving up control is sort of a luxury for those who have already earned it? Am I making any sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably absolutely true. So I think this sort of ties into what I'm studying for my dissertation. I'm trying to quantify how spontaneous somebody feels while they're speaking. And when you look at the literature of learning complex motor movements, if you take a golfer or a basketball player, the more they try to control their golf swing, the more they try to control taking a foul shot, often the worse the performance is, right? That exertion of control can degrade performance and sort of get in the way. However, those are already well-learned movements and activities. When you're initially learning something, you have no choice but to exert control, because outside of that exertion, nothing happens because you don't know what you're doing, right? So I think if you are struggling to get sounds out, if your stuttering is such that it's very effortful, it could probably be very helpful to exert control to say those things more easily and develop those motor movements that are more facilitative to spontaneous speech. But once those are committed to a procedural memory, once those are already learned, I'm not sure that continuing to exert control is beneficial anymore. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I could talk to you about it all day. It's given me a lot to think about. Is it? See, I'm just going to end up repeating myself because I guess I and I'm sorry to bring it back to me because I invited you on air to talk about you, but I felt out of control with my stuttering for so long, and so my avenue for speech therapy was it's okay to stutter and it's okay to stutter less. And I valued doing those things simultaneously. And at different points, there would be different focuses. So some points I would really just want to stutter openly. At other points, I'd want to stutter with more control. At other points, I'd want to do both. But looking back, it just seems so much easier now to be okay with stuttering, knowing that I have some ability to change it or control it or to move forward through it, even if and when it still happens. So I'm sorry. I feel like I'm saying the same thing back to you. So I hear everything you're saying. I just find control to be much easier to let go of once you know that you have it, at least for me.
Yeah, that's something I've, in developing this dissertation project, my mentor, Walt Manning, has sort of talked about a lot with me, is that when you're trying to get somebody to stop avoiding stuttering or to openly stutter, that's much easier when they know that should they get stuck in a block, they know how to get out of it, right? It's much easier to openly stutter when you know that this can only get so bad because I have the tools to unstuck myself. Yeah. Before you have that tool, asking somebody to openly stutter can be terrifying, right? So I think in order to have the confidence to give up control, you have to have the confidence that should something go wrong, you can fix it. Walt likes a lot of sports analogies. He likes to talk about kayaking, where when you're trying not to turn over in the kayak, you're more likely to. But once you know comfortably that should you turn over, it's easy to turn back around, you don't turn over as much because you're less likely to try not to.
I don't want to speak for you, Chris, but I imagine we would both agree that there are stutterers out there too who say that trying to, quote, you know, control stuttering feels so burdensome and wrong to them that they would rather stutter without control because the control is such a burden or so oppressive. And I've had stutterers say things like that to me. So I know there's a lot of different views on this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a one thing that helps everybody. If that lack of spontaneity that accompanies trying to exert control is worse than the effort of fluency, then yeah, it doesn't make sense to do that. I think that the critique of those individuals is spot on, that speech is complicated and different people value different aspects of it. And not everybody's going to be okay with the same balance of fluency, control, spontaneity, effort. I think that's a valid critique, but I think the response is that, you know, nobody's forcing anybody to speak a certain way, that you have to find what works best for you.
And that is a great place to leave it. It's amazing. I said, hey, Chris, just come on for 15 minutes. We'll talk about your religious experience. And then I keep you for almost an hour. Oh, boy. I hope you'll come back sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter.
Well, I want to thank you, Christopher Constantino, PhD student at the University of Memphis. And I look forward to reading your final dissertation, man.
Thanks, Peter. Hopefully, you eventually get it done.
I have no doubt you will. No doubt. I have faith that you will.
Thank you.
Now we've wrapped it up. Full circle.